Hey guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOL.com and the Times Picayune. The NBA Finals are set. This is an event for hoops heads. Maybe the ratings are good, maybe they're bad. I don't care, Adam. I don't care about the ratings. I don't care about the social media engagement. This one is for the people who like basketball. So we're going to talk about Nuggets Heat a little bit. But first, we've got a little bit of news to get to. The Pelicans, as I put out on NOL.com on Tuesday night, plan to restructure their player care and performance team after an injury-marred 2022-2023 season. Aaron Nelson has been the team's vice president of player performance and care for the last four seasons. In that time, the Pelicans have finished 7th, 27th, 20th, in 7th in games lost due to injury. So not a sterling track record in New Orleans, but not a horrible one either, I would say. And that's pretty much all I can say at this time. There's just going to be a restructuring in some way, and I think a lot is still TBD. But what are your initial thoughts at this point in the offseason about that news?
I mean, seemingly it affects the only name in that group that I know, and will be a change for him. And that's, for me, that's Aaron Nelson. I think it's interesting given that, like, I feel like the counter media that was put out at the end of the season was like, don't focus on the training and health portion of this. We have a lot we have to do. It was like ramping down the pressure on this specific area. And now here we are with seemingly a major change is going to come. And that seems like an about face in a pretty short amount of time where, like, we're not completely into the off. We're not even into the actual NBA offseason yet. And we've pivoted from like the final things we heard from Griff that were given to the media.
I have a different read on that.
All right.
I think he, that, what Griff said at exit interviews in April, like he was trying to just lower the temperature a little bit. But to me, what those quotes meant, and you can look at them in my story, were this is an issue that is much larger than simply Aaron Nelson and his staff. Like this has to do with players. This has to do with the environment that I, David Griffin, have fostered in that locker room. He even said, I didn't do a good enough job of creating an environment where players were holding each other accountable. And we can talk about what we think that means. But I just took his comments as this is a multifaceted issue that has more to do with just Aaron Nelson and his staff. And I mean, we can get into that, but I actually agree with that. Like Aaron Nelson, like I'm just reading the quote tweets is like, people, when something like this happens, like people just want to dunk on you, but I'm not dunking on him today. Like I have a lot of thoughts on, like the Pelicans injury issues last season. I reported them at the time, by the way. Like I told you guys in January, there was frustration over Brandon Ingram's slow return from a toe bruise. He missed 29 straight games with a toe contusion. There are many people in the Pelicans organization who felt like he could have returned to the floor much sooner than he did. Zion
felt like he could return sooner than he did. And at least that's what he told outside media. So,
yeah, my only thing is like, I kind of agree with Griff that it actually, this is a complicated issue.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I mean, you look at the whole of this year, if you think it's as simple as like Aaron Nelson does bad job, that's why guys miss games. No, like all these situations were very dynamically different. You had one where you have a guy that on more than one occasion has gotten tremendously hurt because of his size and because of, like it or not, whether his effort is different coming into the season or not, they're still not a good start of the year, full season package of how Zion Williamson takes care of himself. And through injuries, I know injuries complicate this for him, but the idea that like this thing goes off a cliff sometimes, and it has. He is the guy that gets hurt in a major way and then is dying to play. Brandon Ingram's kind of coming from the opposite end of the spectrum. Gets small nagging injury, always misses more time than anybody with that average injury.
This didn't just happen this season. It happened the previous season too. This is a multi-season issue.
Yeah. And so I think you have those two things. And then obviously we had other guys miss time. I think those were issues that were kind of inescapable. I think you heard, like, I think we know the deal with Larry. I don't think Larry is like this big secret. We overran the hell out of him. He got lugged way too many minutes all year and his body was going to break down. His body does break down. CJ got pounded into the ground. His thumb is like dangling from his hand by the time we're done with the season. Like, it's not a shock that those guys land where they are. And I don't think that's an Aaron Nelson issue. I think that's we're down a lot of guys and we're missing some skills that land specifically on guys that we're missing. And we were not prepared. And Griff spoke to that as well. It sounds very much like we'll never have the absolute absence of ball handling capability and big man like rebounding in size that we came into this season with. It sounds like we're going to be prepared for a bit of a multifaceted approach here, assuming that these guys are going to miss time. So yeah, the environment's complicated. It's the players. It's their mentality. It's the environment. CJ just told us on the Russillo pod that he's been very frank with Zion about how to do this stuff and about how he needs to approach taking care of himself, and that everything he's put out, you know, on wax is stuff that he's said to him in person. It is complex, and it's not just Aaron Nelson, but at the same time, there are certain things you can change. There are certain things you can't. I don't know that we can change the players.
And I mean, who is the one person in the state of Louisiana who drives winning the most for professional basketball?
It's Zion Latif Williamson.
Zion Williamson. So you're going to get rid of him right now when he's about to go into year one of a 5-year extension? Or are you going to change the things around him and hope for better results?
I mean, you have to exhaust, and we've talked about this, you know, on and off the podcast. You have to exhaust every option after seeing what he is in the limited time that you have seen it. The fact that this guy is an immediate plug-in top 10 player. He is that kind of force. He's an all-star starter if he plays half a season. And he would have been an all-NBA player if he plays 60 games. Well, now I guess now it has to be 65. That's like, you just have to put your eggs in that basket. You have to find out. You have to reach the bottom of the barrel on those options before you decide to do something else. And I know it's a tricky spot now. Like, you are now starting to enter this territory of, if this repeats again, Zion as an asset, as a player, as viewed in the league, if you're able to even attempt to make a trade, he's now a max player with a wild injury history that has shown you, like, the difference is a level of effort. Everything we've heard is it's a level of effort and understanding. It is a level of professionalism to get him to a level. And, like, is his work harder than everybody else in the NBA? Maybe. Maybe it's harder for him than literally every other player in the NBA because of what his body type is. But that has yet to be seen done correctly over a long period of time. We've seen a singular offseason where he got in a phenomenal shape. So we know it can happen. What does it take to keep him there? What does it take to maintain that over a year? Whatever it is, throw it all at the wall. This is the year. You have to find out if this works together. You didn't get the biggest shame of this season. You didn't find out a damn thing about how him, Brandon Ingram, and CJ McCollum fit together. You did not find. You found out that CJ can kind of work with whoever. You found out both of them are good. You haven't found out a damn thing about them playing together, and you have to.
Yeah, look, I'm just going to like put this bluntly. Like, my personal opinion is that I think Brandon Ingram just needs to withstand discomfort a little bit better. That's just my take after talking to a lot of people and watching every game the past 2 years. I think he just needs to be a little more comfortable with discomfort. And I know that gets thorny and maybe me in trouble. That's all I'm saying. And obviously, Zion just needs to learn how to become a better pro. And we've heard a bunch of his teammates say that. Like, I think that's a huge part of this issue. And I think, you know, what Griff has been talking about, like, how many times did he use the word accountability over the last 30 games? I think he is talking about creating an environment in the locker room where players hold each other accountable. And there is kind of the jerk in there who also has the cachet where he's like, come on, Brandon, we need you to play, man. Like, we're not going to do anything if you don't play basketball. And Zion, get it together, man. Like, you got to become a better pro. And you know, for those guys to take him seriously, like, Griff needs to figure out how to create that environment. I believe that is what he is saying.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying about Brandon is objective, right? Like, eventually, during that long stream of missing games, it essentially seems like we reached a point where he was forced to make a choice to play. And it's not that he was completely comfortable now. It was just like, hey, we've let this play out for a really long time. We're running short on time as a team, and you kind of just have to play now. And he was uncomfortable for a few games. And then what happened? He looked like Brandon Ingram, superstar player. There's not a lot of logic to suggest that same thing couldn't have been done maybe 10 games earlier, because it doesn't seem like a lot changed. He was cleared well prior to that. So, you know, a decision eventually got made. He played, he was uncomfortable for a few games, and then he was great. That could have happened well before then. I think that is just objectively true. People can read into it, be mad about it all they want. That's what played out in real life.
And the reason why this is such a big deal is the Pelicans and their medical staff and the issues they had with that were well documented prior to 2019, right? Like, ESPN had that big story of, well, the Saints and the Pelicans share medical personnel, and it's clear that this is not close to, like, you know, like, what a medical staff should be in the NBA at this point in time. And the Pelicans went to great lengths to correct that problem, right? They got Aaron Nelson from Phoenix, where he was regarded as, you know, one of the top people in his profession, you know, won the Athletic Trainer of the Year of the Award in 2009. Grant Hill, Shaq, you know, a lot of respected guys in the NBA. Yeah, Steve Nash, you know, said, this guy helped prolong my career. He helped me play in as many games as possible. Like, he had, you know, good players' endorsements. And for whatever reason, it just has not worked out in New Orleans so far in the 4 years he's been here. But he had, you know, a 26-year track record of being a respected guy before he got here.
Yeah, Amari Stoudemire as well. Like, Phoenix team really was like a team full of dudes that had real injury histories, and then they were just okay. Then all of a sudden they were good. Like, Stoudemire was facing issues with his contract extensions and everything because he had issues. Steve Nash didn't stay in Dallas because they didn't believe that his body was going to stay together. And he ends up going to Phoenix, and we see what happens. Like, that's all Nelson. It's like the most famous case in NBA history of, like, a guy that we learned his name because he fixed the Island of Misfit Toys and turned him into a conference finals annual contender.
Yeah. And the other part of this is we should say is two out of the three head coaches who have worked with Aaron Nelson in New Orleans have not liked working with him. Alvin Gentry, really? And Stan Van Gundy. We know this because Stan Van Gundy, literally on multiple TNT broadcasts this year, you know, basically just crush him and the Pelicans medical staff.
Stan was out of pocket. Stan was not even trying to,
it was just,
no punches were pulled.
Yeah. No punches were pulled. I mean, this was two different national broadcasts where he is the color commentator on these broadcasts. So look, that's about as blatant as you can get of, like, a guy who worked with him recently being like, nah, this ain't it. This approach ain't working.
Stan also thinks that plain Lays are the best chip in the world, and that popcorn is only to be eaten with salt and nothing else. No flavors, no butter, just straight up salt. He is the plainest fat man I've ever encountered. He likes only, like, just give me the trans fats. Don't add any of that extra stuff. Straight trans fat, I'm good. Weird opinions.
Yeah. I'm just curious what the 2023-2024 Pelicans look like, because I think I know, but also part of me is like, there's a lot on the table here. I mean, last season, I should just say the last half of last season was so damaging on a lot of levels. I mean, you only get so many opportunities in the life cycle of a team where, you know, the stars are kind of aligned. And they were aligned at the start of the season. You know, like you are in a place where Zion's in the last year of his rookie deal. You can get Zion, you get CJ at this massive number, BI at this massive number. You got a bunch of good role players, many of whom are still cheap because they're in their rookie deals. Like the stars were kind of aligned, and for them to whiff on that opportunity, it still pains me, Adam. You only get so many chances like that. Like Zion's going to go from making 13 to 33. And if he plays, fine. He's that good, obviously. But like we're going to be in the space where Zion, BI, and CJ are making $90, $100 million. I mean, if you're reading the reporting around the CBA, it's going to get difficult to keep three high-paid guys together. So that's why it was so frustrating for me. You only get so many chances to do something special. The stars were aligned and the Pelicans blew it. And, you know, Aaron Nelson is like, there's going to be a restructuring. And like, I think a lot is unknown about that right now, but this issue has a lot more to do with than just him. It really does. This is on a lot of people.
Yeah. He's unfortunately, you know, we've talked about this. We're like all season. We talked about like how much of this blame actually lands on him. We talked about it again just now. He's just the easiest part to change. And unfortunately, like that's just how this plays out. And we kind of talked about this being an eventuality only because like it is the easiest thing to do. It's the same reason that like casual fans always want to fire a coach. It's just the easiest thing to say. Yeah. I can't change Brandon and Zion, and I can't change the amount of dollars that I put in their pockets. I've got to convince them to want to be different guys than the ones that I have experienced to this point. I have a certain makeup that I've approached them with. I have the ability to edit that. All I can do is edit that. And that's seemingly what we're going to do.
You sent me a clip during the week of comments Charles Barkley made about Zion and the situation, and we'll play the audio of it for you here.
Don Williamson, yo, man, I don't know you. We've never met. But somebody got to tell you, like, yo, man, you got to get in shape because you're going to keep getting hurt if you're out of shape. I don't think the coach has enough power to tell you what to do. I don't think David Griffin, who's a friend of mine, has enough power to tell you what to do. I'm so blessed for Moses Malone told me to get my fat ass in shape and made me lose 50 pounds. It changed the whole dynamic of my life. I hope you don't take this the wrong way. I want you to be a great basketball player. I've been in your shoes, being very talented, being overweight. And like I say, I thank God every day for Moses. Rest in peace.
You're playing the Moses role for Zion.
I would love to. Let me tell you something. I've seen dozens guys eat their way out of the NBA. It can happen quickly because once you start getting hurt, you're going to keep getting hurt. My first contract was 4 years, $2 million. I got in shape for $2 million. You're going to make another $500 million. All you got to do is get in shape.
So, yeah, I mean, the crux of what Chuck is saying is, Zion, I'll be your Moses Malone. Moses Malone told the young Chuck, brother, you need to lose 50 pounds. It changed his career. Do you think that is viable? Do you think Chuck is can be Zion's Moses Malone, you know, talking on a podcast here?
I mean, look, I think Chuck is the first person that comes to mind for just about every modern NBA fan. If you had to pick somebody that is a voice that is respected enough, that would be brazen enough to send him the message exactly how he needs to hear it and not care, Chuck is the guy we'd all name. When we try to come up with comps for like what Zion is and what his body type is, it's the closest person you can think of. It's like him, Larry Johnson, but play style's not the same as them. You know, he's essentially like Giannis, but in their body. So it's interesting that he's the person that speaks up. I wish and pray that he could get his hands on him and talk to him and affect him that way. Do I think there's a world where Zion's going to lose 50 pounds? No. Do I think he needs to lose 50 pounds? No. I think there's a realistic approach to this. Like there's a certain way the human body works. His body has told us that it likes to be heavy. Like his frame, generally speaking, he carries more weight than your average person and still has all this explosiveness. I just think there's a better way to maintain that throughout the season. There's a better day-to-day approach. Like it feels like what we did was we had a really good summer boot camp that got him in great shape. And when he was playing and he's healthy, he stayed in that great shape. And as soon as he doesn't have on-court cardio, it all goes to hell. So the longer he's off the court, the sooner we go downhill. That's the thing that we have to overcome. We have to find a way to not just lose everything the second we don't have on-court cardio. It's unfortunate that it's always his legs that are taken out from him, but it's also very predictable. And it was the concern coming into the draft. It was the thing people said, hey, these numbers don't make sense. The reason you've never seen a guy like this make sense is because it doesn't. So if he's going to have explosion injuries, it's going to impact his lower body. He's not going to be able to run. We've got to have a go-to approach for this problem. I love it if it's Chuck. It'd be great if it could be. Do I think anybody, you know, especially Chuck, is going to get let in the circle? I wish, but like I said, I don't even get to see the dude play with other NBA athletes at Brickley's. So why would I think that Chuck's going to make it into his living room?
Yeah. I mean, part of what Chuck was saying was you're getting hurt because you weigh too much. And I mean, I think there's something to that, but I also think the opposite thing is true, which is you're getting hurt, which leads you to weighing way too much. Like as you pointed out, the weight gain is occurring while he is injured. I mean, just everything goes to hell for the Pelicans. We've seen this three times when Zion suffers these significant lower extremity injuries. I mean, this happened three different times with the torn meniscus his rookie year, the right foot, his third season, and this year with the hamstring strain. It goes to hell for whatever reason. So I think if Zion were to get down to 270 and look like the guy we saw at Duke, like that would help. But to me, and I'm not an expert, I think you have to at least look at like the way you're training to. Like I think like flexibility and core strength and things like that, like those are very significant things for Zion. Like just having your muscles be able to absorb the incredible shock you're putting on them. And I don't know anything about the way he trains. I just think like the way you're doing it is as important as like trying to get down to X amount of pounds, I would say.
Yeah, I don't think the number of weight is something like that just in American culture is not talked about the right way. Like we talk about a number and we immediately have something programmed in our mind about like what is a healthy weight for a given body style. Like we have a number in our mind. That number does not matter nearly as much as his body fat percentage. And it does not matter nearly as much as something that's a little bit unmeasurable. How elastic are his joints? How much space does he have in his spine and in his knees? Elongating your body is something that every single aging player in professional sports that has had a long career, every one of them preaches that is part of how they got where they got. That is part of how they played to 40. You have to create space. You have to elongate your body. That is how you keep from these things from happening. We've said it before. I'm in the same place I've been. It is already clear that his biggest concern every year needs to be that I need to play more than 60 games, and he needs to manage himself to that. That needs to be the goal every single year. It's just play more than 60.
Joel Embiid's career arc should be his goal, and it is an obtainable one.
Yeah. And if he manages it that way, and if every day his goal is I need to be available, that's probably going to mean that there's going to be some rest days and things like that. I know that's something currently that bothers him. That's probably going to be the sweet spot. It's going to be working out differently. It's going to be definitely approaching diet differently. I don't want to see him pull up in a Wendy's drive-thru ever again. But, you know, I guess if he wants to get his 99-cent frosty fix, whatever. But just
and
like
didn't have a bag, man. You know what? I don't condone that. I don't condone eating fast food if you're a professional athlete.
I'll go get it for you, Zion.
Get a Wendy's bag, man. If you're going to do that, come on,
and don't take a picture with the server. He threw him a peace sign, like, yeah, man, all right, no.
Yeah, I mean, I think real
it's
quick,
solvable.
I mean,
it's just solvable.
Yeah, I mean, part of the frustration too with me is like you have seen LeBron like lay the blueprint kind of for like athletic freaks of like here's some of the things you can do to just maximize your career. You know, like you can hire the best people. You have unlimited resources, and like you, Zion doesn't have to come up with the answers by himself. Like he can, you know, hire the best people to come up with them for him. And it just seems like he hasn't done that. Like, it just doesn't seem like he's gotten great people around him. And his, you know, stepfather at times has continued to be his trainer. And it's like, we're past that, man. Like, go get the best people and follow the plan. Like, there's really no more excuses. You have basically unlimited resources. Do it, please.
All right. We have a finals matchup. I know this is a Pelicans podcast. We have a finals matchup. It is set. Do you want to start with the matchup itself, or can we talk about Boston, Miami, game six, game seven? Because Martin Scorsese would approve. That was cinema. That was true, true cinema.
It was cinema, man. So I watched game six at a bar, and good God, that Derek White putback was an amazing play. An amazing play. Derek White, by the way, incredible pickup for the Celtics. Like, he's been a stud for them. He showed these flashes in San Antonio. I did a San Antonio-Denver first-round series where Derek White put 38 on the Nuggets. Like, he's been a good player for a while, and like he's in a perfect role for him. I thought Miami was going to lose game seven, like most people. I was like, there's no way they can emotionally recover from that incredible play. Oh my God, they did. Like, heat culture is a real thing. Like, their mental toughness is a real thing.
And at the same time, the last thing I want to see is everybody in the trade machine or jumping up or throwing out contract offers to Max Strus and Gabe Vincent, and Caleb Martin's not available yet, but trades for Caleb Martin. Chill, everybody. Like, the San Antonio Spurs taught us this. Just because they can take the D-lister and make them into a rotation player does not mean that you can. Do not sign these people to exorbitant contracts. The revival of Duncan Robinson, who is now a pick and roll big? What is happening? Duncan Robinson is just flying to the rim left and right. Like, it is insane. The end of that play, like the final play of game six, you know, at first glance, I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, Max is clearly shadowing Tatum, doubling, making sure that guy doesn't get the ball because he can hit that shot from anywhere. So he's already in chase as soon as Derek White cuts the basket. So at first I'm like, Strus didn't get there. You got to get the inbounder. You got to get there. And really, like, there was like a split second where he looks up at the ball, looks up at the shot going up, and maybe that puts him a step behind Derek. Bam obviously couldn't come off of Jaylen Brown, who was sitting in the post. Like, they made it so that the two best players can't get the ball. That was how it was designed. Really, Strus did the best he could, and White just beelined and got there, and the ball bounced to the perfect place for him to be able to put it back in enough time. If it bounces anywhere else, he doesn't make that play.
NBA Twitter loves just killing guys and not giving guys credit for making amazing plays. Like,
it's a great play.
The problem was not the defense on the ball. Like, it was fine that he shaded over like that to try to prevent Tatum from getting the ball. Like, maybe he could have played it different, but it's like, no. This broke perfectly for Derek White. He made an unbelievable play.
And it was zero hesitation from Derek. As soon as the ball went in, he literally took the clearly open path. He went straight to the baseline, and he was going straight to the rim. He did not look. Marcus Smart got that ball. He knew it was going up immediately because that was a secondary option. That was not – obviously, they would like to get the ball in Tatum or Jaylen Brown's hands. You doubled Tatum. Brown sitting in the post, and he's got Bam on him. So you took away option one, option two. Smart takes the shot immediately, tried to sell a foul, like flung himself out of the frame, no call. But ball bounced in and out, stayed up long enough. Derek got there. It was just a crazy play. But to go from that, from losing three games in a row, the funniest outcome possible is what ends up happening. The fact that Boston loses by 20 in Boston. Bill Simmons's mouth agape. Bill Simmons and his dad recording, you know, the depression pod afterward. And the idea that it wasn't even that Jimmy and Bam were incredible. Like, it wasn't that the two Miami players that were going to come back and carry them. They didn't have phenomenal games. They just kind of did enough at the end. It was the Caleb Martin show. It was the Caleb Martin show. And again, this is another one of my dudes where, like, the only reason I recommend to people, like, go play fantasy basketball. Because if you do, you will have an odd familiarity with role players on bad teams. Caleb Martin for the Charlotte Hornets was a guy that was rotating through my teams and everybody in our league. He was a useful guy. Every time a point guard goes down, they step up his role. He touches the ball more. All of a sudden, he's got 6 assists, 16 points. Like, he's a useful player. If you can grab a McDaniels or a Martin, it's going to work out. It's just, it's going to be helpful. Did I think this was in the basket? No. This was not in his bag. Please God, don't anybody get wild and be like, I need to trade for Caleb Martin now, because clearly he is an undercover stud. No, he's a really nice, tall athlete that can handle the ball. He is a nice secondary option, you know, bench rotation guy.
Also very NBA Twitter to be like, Caleb Martin is going to get paid next year. And then you look it up on Spot Track. Yeah, look it up on Spot Track, and guys, he's not an unrestricted free agent. Like, it's just such an NBA Twitter sentiment. I can't wait for the day where I don't even have to be on here anymore. It's just so silly.
Gabe Vincent actually can get paid. Gabe Vincent, which oddly people called him 3-and-D. I'm always really torn on, like, people's definition of 3-and-D. 3-and-D to me is like a wing who can play defense and shoot threes. It's not just anyone who can shoot a three and play defense. Like, he's a backup guard. He's a decent ball handler that can make some shots. Like, he's a nice guard rotation piece. He's not, like, I think 3-and-D and I think wing, and he's not quite a wing. But he is available to be overpaid, and someone will, I'm sure.
Yeah, the most, I mean, like, Boston couldn't do anything with Miami zone defense, and the single most disappointing player in the game to me was Jaylen Brown. I mean, cuz Jason Tatum,
he can't dribble.
Clearly sprained his ankle on, like, the first play of the game, and I was like, he's hobbled, he's in pain. Like, Jaylen, we're gonna need more from you, and he just couldn't do it. He's a very good player, a huge flaw in his game. Like, he has got to just improve that handle.
It's not gonna happen. He's 26. He's 26. This has been the issue. I'm gonna do the thing. I've shouted this guy out like 100 times on our podcast. I'm gonna do it again. He asked me to do it, and he really has been right about him for 3 years. When people talk about Brandon Ingram and where he ranks, a person that he gets comped to a lot in terms of where they should rank and who's better than who, a lot of people always like to have Jaylen Brown as, like, the delineator of him and then Brandon Ingram. And Jeremy Wilson, your friend and mine, has always maintained that Jaylen Brown is not nearly as good as people give him credit for, because his defense gets inflated and he can't dribble. And he has said this, there's 100 tweets, I promise, about him not being able to dribble and this always being a fatal flaw. And that's the reason that he can't possibly be above Brandon Ingram. And, you know, this played out exactly how Jeremy would have drawn it up. He 8 turnovers, absolutely just disgusting when on ball. It's not even, and like he said, it's not even that he can't dribble. It's that you can't give him the ball with enough time to be forced to make a decision. If he has to think, it's going to go bad. And, like, it's just going to be a really perplexing decision. Whoever decides to pay him, whether it's Boston or not, this is going to be a really, like, maybe the most complicated contract this offseason is going to be the guy that is Supermax eligible for the Boston Celtics, that absolutely should not get the Supermax from the Boston Celtics, but, like, might have to, because, like, what else are you going to do? Like, the predicament of every NBA team.
You absolutely have to do that if you're Boston. I mean, you absolutely have to do that if you're Boston. Yeah.
No strings?
You've been to a finals with this guy as your second best player. You just got to the Eastern Conference Finals within one game of making the finals. Those are good outcomes, and you keep swinging the bat. And then if you got to move them down the road, move them, you know? But
it's just going to get tough. Him and Tatum, and both of them, honestly, like, Tatum also throughout this entire, including in the games they won, Miami invited them to win game 6. Like, Miami had multiple opportunities. Like, it wasn't like Boston just tore through. They gave up a huge lead and then had to have the miracle play. They screwed up a million times trying to give that game away, and the Heat managed to screw up one additional time. And they didn't even screw up. Honestly, Derek White just made an incredible play. I shouldn't say that. Derek White just made an incredible play.
Note on Jimmy Butler. He made 36 threes in 64 regular season games. So, like, you know, made one every two games, kind of. He's made 21 threes in 17 playoff games. He made three in game seven.
I mean, he does what he needs to when he needs to. Yep. And you want to talk about another guy, like, and maybe this is part of Zion as well. Jimmy Butler regular season versus Jimmy Butler playoff guy, different guy. He does manage himself. LeBron at his age, he manages, like, you know, it gets easy to criticize at 38 years old when you watch him play and he just kind of settles for like eight threes a game and they're low effort. It's just like early clock. I have the ball and I'm 3 feet behind the 3-point line. I'm just going to jack it up. One extra tidbit. And this is the stuff that I think, like, I was thinking coming into this series, and I was thinking regular season versus playoffs. Like, it's a different form of basketball. I was always worried about Al Horford's age at going into matchups like these. Like, you're relying on a much older player, regardless of how rejuvenated he looks. Rob Williams, what's left of his knees after last season? And, you know, is that part of why he wasn't featured more? Like, why don't you bring out him and Horford and throw them out together from the start and play that way? I know, you know, five out spacing, all that stuff, but Rob Williams was a bright spot last year. And he is a
difference maker, and he is special on the defensive end. Like, he is legit special on defense.
And with Horford being able to stretch out to the three, it allows him to be that rover, and you don't get punished for it because there's a big that's potentially got a mismatch that's hanging out in the corner and can make that shot. And they just didn't do it. You know, Missoula's, you know, getting them to watch the town, and they're going to Top Golf. They pulled every single trick out of the bag that they could. You know, I don't know what the next, maybe it wasn't the town. Maybe it was the wrong movie. Maybe instead of Top Golf, they should have done Putt-Putt. I don't know. Stop me if you've heard this before. Team that's heavily reliant on Malcolm Brogdon loses when Malcolm Brogdon gets hurt. Pickup of the year. And again, like, the question with him is, will his body fall apart? It does. Then all of a sudden, they don't have enough creation. They don't have another shot creator. Tatum makes bad decisions late. Jaylen can't make decisions at all. And they're just stuck. They're just stuck. It's a weird mix of players. I don't know what they do, but they got to do something. Maybe it's keep Jaylen Brown and find a way to get Marcus Smart out of there, who is clearly not the defensive player that he was a year ago. I don't know. Complex situation, but finals set. Miami Heat, Denver Nuggets. Your Denver Nuggets. I gotta give them to you. You know, you did the Denver cover.
My
you were
Denver
there.
Nuggets. Well, I was looking this up today. I was looking at offensive efficiency in the playoffs. Denver is number one. They're at 119.7 points per 100 possessions. The next closest team, the Clippers, at 116.3. So the Nuggets are like 3.5 points per 100 possessions higher than the next closest team in offensive efficiency. These dudes are putting the ball in the basket. And it's Jokic, obviously, who's averaging a triple-double. It's Murray, playoff Murray, and it's the role players making a bunch of threes, too.
Look, I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. Bruce Brown and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, they are winning players. They have been winning players in multiple locations. Somehow they get misvalued in the offseason and they're able to get picked up. Like, Denver has been churning those positions, been churning the bench in that rotation, and they landed on two dudes that are made of playoff stuff. And those dudes are hitting threes. Those dudes have morphed into guys that can give you like whatever you need that night. Bruce Brown's playing point guard sometimes. If they don't want to start off the action with Jokic or Jamal Murray on ball, Bruce Brown just brings it up and runs the play. And he might end up spotting up for three at the end of it, and he might make the damn thing. Like, it's crazy what they have. And I know this is like sacrilege to say with everything we've seen from the Miami Heat in these playoffs, but they might be the worst person-for-person matchup for what Denver brings to the table. it might be the worst team that was in this playoffs to match up against Denver in terms of being able to deal with what Denver's going to do. There's
a lot of. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you could say that, but like Miami is also like a cohesive team and is so well coached that it's like there are some things that are exploitable, but I don't think Miami's the easiest team Denver has faced so far in the playoffs.
I don't think so. Not easiest. I didn't say easiest. I said just in terms of like the, when you go matchup for matchup, the tools that you're going to have to throw against a team, the thing that you want to do, like we want to put Jokic in defensive conundrums. We want to challenge him on that end to make the game more taxing. Right. We want to pressure the rim because that's something Denver struggled with all year. And if you can't do those things, you're not likely to succeed against Denver. And the other thing is, Jokic can attack everybody. Like, there is no great defensive person to put on him. He'll beat you whatever way. But you're going to have to throw Bam at him. Bam historically has not held up against Jokic ever.
The Nuggets are 9-1 in their last 10 games against the Heat. And the regular season is obviously a much different game. But yeah, Nuggets have been dominant.
And Jokic has like an offensive rating of like 36 or something whenever playing against Bam specifically. It's disgusting. And there's just like Haywood Highsmith. Like, you're going to have to do that. That's going to be a thing. It's going to have to happen. Or like Jimmy Butler is going to have to take him.
Yeah. I was going to say, I could see them doing the Jimmy, just like put your arms into Jokic's back and do that thing. And Bam, you're right there. And we'll try to slow him down that way. I could see them maybe putting Kevin Love on Jokic, and having Bam, you know, like be the roamer type or something like that. I don't think there are any great options. And the other part of this too is Miami plays more zone defense than any team in the NBA. That was a big part of the reason why they just won that series against Boston. Denver shreds zones. Like, if you look at the points per possession stuff, Denver was like the best offense against zone defenses this year. It's not hard to figure out why. You put Jokic in the middle of that sucker, he can score, get the mid-range, get to the basket, post you up, and he can find shooters from any angle. Like, that's how you beat a zone. You get a big guy that's the ball in the soft spot of defense and let him do his thing.
And you happen to have the best one maybe in the history of basketball to go to. It's so, again, like, so it's not to say like Miami is clearly tough. Miami may very well win a handful of games or may win a couple, but like, I really struggle saying that they like put up a huge fight in this finals. I want them to, I want it to be compelling basketball. I want to see them gut it out, but they like Tyler Hero, they're going to need him. And they've played better defense without him, but defense against this team, like they're going to need offense from somewhere, because to keep up with Denver, like this is a two-sided problem. They need to not only like put up a defense, which I think what we're going to see is like Duncan Robinson's going to play a lot. I don't know that they can go to Kevin Love, but I think they're going to have to just because of size. Like when Michael Porter Jr. is playing small forward, you got to do something about that. Like Aaron Gordon's down there and he's going to punish you. If you let him get any one touch looks within 5 feet of the basket, it's going in, or he's getting fouled and going to the line. Like, it's just exactly what you would want to do to Miami is what Denver does, and exactly what Miami likes to do plays into what Denver likes. And it's just, I just don't have a lot of solutions. I think you have to do a lot of weird stuff, which, hey, it's Spo. Maybe he figures something. Maybe Haywood Highsmith is giving them 16 minutes a game. Maybe he does. Maybe Duncan is playing 20 plus minutes and giving you plus value. But their usual approach is not gonna be the solution for Denver. It's gonna have to be something wild.
The coaching matchup, Malone and Spo, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, two competitive psychos. I love it. Just two
Michael Malone.
Two straight psychos. And I mean,
I'll never get his first name wrong again because I feel like he's gonna find me in my sleep.
Telling you, man. Yeah, he doesn't like shortening that first name.
So strange. So strange. But hey, competitive psycho makes sense that he's friends with Boogie now. Like, the more you learn about him, the more it makes sense that he got along with Boogie Cousins.
All right. What is your prediction before we get out of here? Official prediction.
You want record or you just want victory? Like, you want to say how many games?
I'll go first. I'll say Nuggets in six. I think They sew it up in Miami. I think the Jokic bros give us some iconic moments of them celebrating in a Miami club afterwards.
That is the right prediction. But I feel compelled to go spicier than you because you said what I wanted. So you know what? Screw it. I got nothing to lose here. What's going to happen to me? You're going to kick me off the podcast? Nuggets in five.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like Heat in seven or something.
No, after what I just said, that would be quite the change. I think the Heat have had the ability to out tough teams. And Denver's offense is so potent. And the problem of Jokic is so specifically bad for them that I can't think of many things. Like he's going to get limited. Like maybe he doesn't score 30, but that just means he's going to have 9 assists and like 18 rebounds. Like, Bam's going to win 4 times out of 7 for the first time in his career against that guy. I don't believe that. So unless Jimmy's giving them like 38 a night, I don't see this being that as compelling of a series as it has been against some of these other teams. So yeah, I'll get wild. I'll take another game away and I'll say Denver takes it in 5.
All right, man. Well, I'm looking forward to this series. It's one for hoops heads. Draft is coming up in a couple weeks here. We're going to have plenty of draft content coming to you guys' way in the next few weeks. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.